Welcome to QUT Exec Insights, conversations about business and the changing world, brought to you by QUTX, professional and executive education for the real world. I'm your host, Kate Joiner. Today is a first for our series. I'm in conversation with not one, but two amazing QUT colleagues. I welcome back to the podcast Professor Marek Kowalkiewicz, Chair in Digital Economy, and with him is Michael Roseman, Professor for Innovation Systems in the School of Management, QUT. What my colleagues have in common is a strong interest in working with organisations to create their preferred future in the digital economy. We'll be exploring ways to cultivate future thinking with the leadership of your organisations. So welcome, Marek and Michael.
Hi. Good to see you.
Yeah. Welcome back, Marek. And so you're our first repeat podcast guest, so I guess that's an honour, hey?
I'm so honoured to hear that. Thank you. Thanks for having me again.
You were quite an early guest. I think I was still practising then.
That's right.
So you're both involved in the Chair in Digital Economy. In fact, Michael, you had a role in setting up the Chair in Digital Economy. So what were we trying to achieve by setting up this particular enterprise?
So QUT is, of course, dedicated to being a university for the real world. Working with the real world is essential, and the Chair in Digital Economy is no exception. What we try to do are two things. For the outside, we try to reduce what we call innovation latency. We try to work with external partners and give them faster, more cost-effective access to what's possible and to accelerate the innovation. But also on the inside, QUT benefits by reducing our research latency. It's only by working with external partners that we see research problems, and that creates a first-mover advantage on the inside. So we try to conduct research early on. So you can see that the Chair in Digital Economy aligns strategically well with what QUT tries to achieve, and it's a true win-win for the outside and for the inside.
So has that been the case for you, Marek? Has it been a great ride for you?
Absolutely. It's been a fantastic ride so far, and hopefully for much longer. We've been for the past 4 years or so, we've been working with industry and government, forming what I call a pyramid of collaboration here, a triangle of collaboration, so that academia, industry, and government get together to not just understand what digital economy is and what it means for them, but also jointly work on solutions, jointly work on approaches that focus on the opportunities that the digital economy brings. For the past few years, we have tested a number of approaches to academically rigorous research that at the same time is very relevant for the industry. It's not an easy thing to do to make sure that it's both rigorous and relevant. But I think we're doing quite well in this space.
I think we are too. So you're working with organisations and obviously their leaders to think about their organisations in the digital space. But leaders have the role to engage their organisations in the challenges of the digital space. So how should leaders be thinking a little bit differently about their organisations and bringing their people along as we think about the challenges of digital?
So the current environment is opportunity rich. Digital technologies allow us to enter new pathways, and that must mean that leaders can spot very quickly and early on what's possible. Second, that also means instead of having a narrative that is driven by a sense of urgency, that is problem-centered, we need leaders who can envisage what's possible, who can create stories, who can excite, who facilitate cultural change that is driven by collective excitement about the destination, about a new sense of ambition. And in our work, we realized that's new territory for many leaders. The ability to spot what's possible and to craft a narrative that is engaging and exciting. So independent of which technology we study, that's the sort of leader we try to produce. The leader that envisages future and takes his team with him or with her on that journey.
Well done. Yeah, we think so too. It's always fun when we get whole groups, I think, in the centre to explore some of these problems. So we actually, while the futures can seem a little bit like an abstract concept, sometimes it's good to have a structured way to think about exploiting some of the opportunities. So I know that you've both developed the Disruptive Innovation Leadership course, in fact, Do you want to tell us a little bit more generally about what were the opportunity there?
Absolutely. And look, maybe just to draw a bit of a background story behind it. When I was joining QUT a few years ago, there was one of the important factors for me to consider as someone who was coming from the industry to join a university that has a very specific approach to innovation, to digital transformation. QUT has had a long history of success in a space that is called business process management, and so the school of thought at QUT around innovation informed or inspired, and that's my understanding of the past, informed or inspired by this, has led to this development of an approach to innovation that in some ways is mimicking the process management approach. So, you know, how could you innovate by following step-by-step processes? And I found it very attractive. And to be very frank, that was probably one of the biggest attractors to QUT for me. And so that's the background. And really, you know, what my colleague Michael, together with his other academic colleagues, worked on in the past, formed that, you know, baseline for the course that we developed later on, the Disruptive Innovation Leadership course, in which we share so-called ideation lenses with the participants of the course. Those lenses are really a bit like PowerPoint templates for innovation. You know, sometimes when you create a presentation, you don't want to be concerned about, you know, the choice of colors or the choice of fonts. You just want something to start with, and then you want to work with it to refine it. This is really what the approach that we popularize is about. We like to say that you know, you don't have to be creative to be innovative, and what we mean by that, it's, you know, it's, I'm not sure if it's really true. There is always a bit of creativity in the process, but we're basically trying to say that you don't have to be this archetypical creative type, you know, an artist.
Okay, so I understand that Disruptive Innovation Leadership course is a little bit different perhaps from other professional development and leadership programs that people might have engaged with. Do you want to just tell us an idea about how we approach this very challenging leadership subject?
So I think it's 2 days of intensive co-thinking.
Co-thinking.
So that means the audience is continuously involved. We expose them to a new way of thinking. That means looking at the world, seeing what's possible, and then immediately apply these sort of new thinking patterns to general examples. Could be the Empire State Building, could be a cinema, but then also to the context of their very own organization. And it's this very active participation where you really rewire your brains.
Mm. So we really have to challenge our assumptions about what an organization is and how does it produce value.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
We very much like taking our participants out of their comfort zone, basically from the very beginning of the course. We spent quite a bit of time showing how biased we are when it comes to digital transformation, when it comes to innovation. But we also, you know, in some ways it's a relatively stressful training. In some of the editions of the course, we go to a pub. In some of the other editions,
I was going to say, I saw pictures of people at a pub.
So. That's right. So just going to a pub doesn't sound challenging for most of us. But what we do there is what we call stand up ideation. We take people on stage or give them a soapbox and a microphone, and you know, in a similar way to having comedians in a pub.
Karaoke. Maybe, yeah.
That's right. We throw challenges at them in this very, very unusual environment. Not every edition has a pub tour included, so just to cover this. But it's definitely all about taking people outside of their comfort zone.
Excellent. So my understanding, like, over the 2 days, and this is something I'd really like to engage with myself, there's six kinds of ways of disrupting our thinking, I suppose, and this is what each of the lens encourages us to do. So I understand the first one is proactive organisation. This is the way about thinking about sort of getting closer to the customer and thinking about how we can. I'll let the experts talk rather than me.
So the background is all about reimagining how you deliver value to your customers. We do start with preparing our participants to think about the needs of their customers or the organizations that they work with or individuals that they work with, to think about those differently, and then we apply those, as we call them, ideation lenses. And proactive organization is one of them. In the proactive organization lens, we basically ask, how could you be faster than your customers? How could you predict your customers' needs? How could you predict your customers' life events? And then offer services that your customers might need. There always is a question how to do it in a non-creepy way, so that whenever this happens, your customers are actually helpful, thankful, and not concerned about the offer of a service. But imagine, let's say you're going for a business trip, right? Michael, let's say you're going for a business trip, right? What type of proactive services you could imagine?
So, I mean, the perfect world, the organization knows before I know that I'm going on a business trip. The organization before I know would spot attractive fares for me, would promote fares, would potentially even organize and book a trip for me, knowing what my preferred supplier is. So what Marek described was this notion of, I feel so much trust. I delegate decision rights to the organization that is proactive, and that leads to a fast and incredibly convenient solution if the trust is in existence.
Absolutely. And we apply it to the organizations that are in the room. So whether it's a public sector agency, for instance, which needs to think how to offer public services to citizens, or maybe a retailer thinking, how do I offer refills for a product that a customer already has, and so on. That's the next step, but it's really first introducing that mindset.
So this is the whole thing about taking all kinds of friction away from the way that we engage with organizations. So in a way, yeah.
Especially when, when this particular interaction with a business is more of a burden. If this is something experiential, sometimes you don't want to remove that that process, right? Just like we like sometimes to go shopping just for the experience of shopping. But in cases where we want to remove that burden, that's a very interesting lens to consider.
And one thing we can also think about is the way that we can enhance. So enhance is your second ideation lens. So they're about thinking about, for example, the process by which we transact with the client could be mixed up a bit. Have I got that right?
Yes, that's right. So these two lenses, proactive and enhancing, are both process related. Proactive is very much about starting the process much sooner than previously. Enhancing is about, as you highlighted, Kate, changing the way the process looks. We don't have a predefined opinion on what works best, but what we teach is alternative scenarios. For example, you might say, it's an opportunity to triage a process. So instead of saying we have a sequence of activities, we triage and try to work out, is there, let's say, something like a premium model? Would customers probably pay more for better service? That's a simple question. A second one could be resequencing. Resequencing means you still do the same things, just in a different sequence. A popular example what we see is usage-based pricing models, when payment that happens at the beginning is moved to the end, facilitating anti-new business models. And the third one might be something like optional, when I create optional activities. What we do here is we present so-called enhanced patterns, and then let the audience play with these patterns. So on the one side, they have to be able to design the process, see that a payment could be moved to the end, and the second step is sense making. And if this would be in existence, what is in it for us or our client? So it's just those two steps, and again, it's highly active, interactive. Again, we take a simple scenario to understand the concept, and that's exciting for Marek and myself, we never know what really happens. But we take these concepts to the specific industry or the organization, and it's often eye-opening, also for us an amazing learning experience, how creative individuals are in using these patterns.
And how we can create a client service that's better than people expect, so it exceeds their expectations. Yeah. So we can also, something that that I find quite intriguing, I suppose, is your derive lens, so which is how might another organization run your business. So we often think in universities, if Netflix was running our business, how would it look? I think it's quite an intriguing question because it really mixes it up, doesn't it? Is that what's intended, you know, by the derived lens?
That's right. That's right. You got it. So if Netflix were running QUT, we would at this stage be creating so much content that you would not even consider going into any other university because there's just so much available in this particular.
So we would stream our services.
It might be this as well, but you know, those lenses are probably more about the mindset rather than about, you know, particular technologies. So we would look at, you know, the if you're using the example of this particular organization, would probably look at the shift of the types of services offered, you know, from rental services through media, through streaming to media production, right? And in a similar way, we would think about ourselves. And like I'm saying, the university at this stage would be probably, you know, creating a lot of content. Ultimately, Derive is the lens is all about recognizing that there might be other industries that, you know, on the surface are very different. But when you look a bit more closely at them, you will see a lot of similarities and recognize that they have already solved the problems that you're having. I love how Michael uses the example of movie productions, where this is a business which has to hire a lot of people for a very short period of time and then let them go at the end of the production. And Michael draws that analogy to higher education sector, where we have to do a very similar thing every semester with our teaching staff. But also the same thing happens with students, right? So onboarding students, onboarding new employees. There's a lot that the media industry or filmmaking industry could learn from universities, perhaps even outsource some of the operations to other universities. We love asking those questions. You know, we love to ask, how would Australia Post operate if they were run by Hilton, the hotel chain? How would they?
Well, I mean, it's a good question. It's important for the
concierge services. Yeah.
Well, it's important to understand when we give you an industry, whether it's Disney, Hilton, or Netflix, what are the concepts that these industries do really well? So it's often easy for the audience to look at an industry, but it's challenging to understand what can I learn. So with a hotel, you might argue they do loyalty programs or random acts of kindness, upgrading extremely well. And that shows also the tradition of DILG. So the course is less about here's a problem and who else has solved this in another industry. It's sometimes just searching for inspirations.
Searching for inspiration. So your fourth ideation lens is social capital. So that it's looking at, I'll let you explain it, but I know a lot of businesses, particularly service businesses, are trying to build community. That seems to be the big theme at the moment. So it is about how does your business attract social capital? Have I got that right, Michael?
Correct. So in a simple way, we say, how do I create a company that gets better the bigger it is? In theoretical terms, we talk about network effects, and that often means a peer-to-peer, a customer-to-customer conversation. This is when products become platforms. Take a bank. Behind every mortgage is a homeowner. Now I could either compete on selling mortgages or creating a community of homeowners. In a car insurance environment, behind every car insurance is a car owner. So what we try to encourage is a community that creates a new lock-in effect. So when you see typical internet success stories, they have a very high market share, and it comes from that sort of social capital. And so what we do in our conversations, we ask the audience, tap into your customer cohort, and then try to work out if this is not a single service provided to a single customer, but you actually would witness customer-to-customer conversations, curation or shared content production, what would emerge?
What would emerge? Yeah, so a fascinating thought experiment, as they all are. That's what the ideation lenses are. They help us think in different ways, experiment in different ways, in a safe environment.
Absolutely, and it is fascinating when we look at organizations that are in the room during the Disruptive Innovation Leadership course, and we introduce a lens like this one, that moment when they realized the social capital that they have, It's almost a revelation to, you know, to some of them. And then we realized that sometimes you can almost, you know, flip the equation here, and from just customers, you could turn those groups into value providers. The way, you know, Michael described it as lock-in effects, that's one approach. But in some cases, you can even look at your customers as practically employees, right? We had a beautiful example with Queensland State Archives, where they realized that they are the largest employer in Queensland. Not when you look at the contracts that they issue, they're a relatively small group, but because they're in the business of creating and maintaining public records, it happens that practically every public sector employee and more have to work for them by appraising documents, by, you know, working with the records. So now the question is, now that you have this workforce that's possibly into millions of people, what can you do with them?
Yeah, so they're all co-producing the product. The value. Right? The value, absolutely. So sometimes we can think about that's an asset. So the social capital is an asset. But we have other assets in our organisations that we may not use to full effect. So this is the utilise lens. So what's going on? What kind of assets do we have lying around that we could create more value from?
We like to say that we talk about hardware, software, and wetware. And what we mean by that is hardware are those assets that that are such as buildings or facilities that, that organizations might have. Software could be the digital assets. Wetware is the humans.
I love that term. It's a little bit dystopian, though, I think, Marek.
It is. Like I said, we like to take people outside of the comfort zone. There's more. Obviously, there's more. You know, there are assets such as, you know, the brand and the perception, the trust in the organization, right? But it's all about having almost a survey of assets available for an organization, and then it's a very simple question. And again, this is common with all the lenses that we're talking about. They're meant to give individuals a confidence when it comes to ideation. It's not like brainstorming where we don't know where to go with our ideas.
So you've got a few guardrails around it.
Correct.
You know, scaffolding.
So with those assets, we're asking a very simple question. Now that you have listed those assets, are there any new ways you could utilize them? And of course, you know, we start with very simple examples, and the simple examples are, you know, there's underutilized space. What could we be doing with this space? But at some stage, we go into, you know, a level of conversation where we talk, well, we have, let's say we're a childcare services provider. We could look into one of our assets, which is connections between the parents of the children that we take care of. Have we ever done anything about this network, the social network of parents? Is there any potential there, right? You can see that I'm also sort of leaking to the one of the lenses that we discussed before, that happens quite often, but it's all about those completely new underutilized areas.
Mm. So it brings us to our last, and these, I can see how they're all related in a way, the oppositional thinking. So that thinking about the process, business model or strategy as if the opposite was reality. So instead of charging your customers, they you pay them, for example. So I know that the example that you use is their business where you take your car to the airport and pay for housing the car, or they could pay you for using your car. So that, as an example of oppositional thinking. Have I got that right?
That's right, Kate. Yeah. So oppositional is maybe the closest to business model innovation. So what we do is we say, well, take the key assumptions that are currently in place in your organization or in your industry and put them upside down. We don't say it always works, but again, it's searching for inspirations, trying to work out what could happen. So what you describe is a typical, what's the opposite when it comes to payment? So instead of you as a customer paying me, we pay you, and then we try to work out how we get there. It could be simple services. So you might be a healthcare provider. Instead of saying, I look after sick people, I try to make sure that you remain healthy. And as long as you're healthy, you repay me. And in the moment you get sick, I take over. It could be directional. So instead of the customer coming to a supermarket, the supermarket might say, I come to you. And that gave birth to pop-up stores. So it's not just only about who pays. It could be where the service is delivered, how it's delivered. And what we use is a sort of strategy canvas, maybe now from Blue Ocean Strategy. So what used to be low is high, what is high is low. And again, like what Marek highlighted, all we do is we give you prompts in search of the answer, what else is possible.
So the oppositional lens that you could use or the approach here that you could use to arrive at this would be, you know, rather than focusing on the positive outputs at the end of the pipeline when you're a health institution, you actually want to reduce the beginning of your pipeline, right? So narrow down your pipeline, and that's taking to extreme what Michael just said with the strategy canvas, right? You just look at one of those areas and say, you know, let's move it from high to low, and then the other one from low to high.
But I think it's also a nice example that shows how lenses come together. So while we might present them in a sequential fashion, the example you just used on the one side would say it's oppositional. I look after you and want to make sure you're healthy as opposed to looking after you once you're sick. But second, it's an example for being proactive. So I don't react to you once you're sick. I try to be part of your life as soon as I can. So sometimes we come up with the same solution from different lenses. And at the very end, we then also practice composing more than just one lens.
So this sounds like a fabulous program. So if individuals or organizations were keen to explore the possibilities here, where would they go?
This is a wonderful partnership of our small team at QUT with QUTX, and QUTX being the face of QUT and the arm of QUT and whatever other body parts of QUT are relevant here when it comes to delivering executive education. So anyone who's interested attending the program, whether an individual or an organization, so we have open courses. We also have courses that are specific for organizations. Just go straight to the QUTX website or visit QUTX on site to have a conversation with the lovely people here.
Well, I look forward to taking that program in the near future, I hope. And at this point, I'll say thank you, Marek. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Kate.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of QUT Exec Insights, brought to you by QUTX, Executive Education for the Real World. You can comment on the podcast or make suggestions for future guests at execinsights@qut.edu.au. We would love to hear from you. If you would like more information about professional development for yourself or your team, please search QUTX, that's QUTEX, and you will find our full range of programs. I'm your host, Kate Joiner, with sound recording and editing by Lance Scaife-Elliott. See you next time.